Chapter 15. The End of the Millennium.
The last phase of the Dark Ages had begun. As the legend of Charlemagne faded, Christian Europe found itself in the grip of a dual fear. Fear of attack from the north by the buccaneering Vikings and from the south by the Saracens.
Already in the last decade of the 8th century, the blonde Danes had brought terror and destruction when they sacked Lindisfarne, or Holy Island, off the Northumbrian coast, carrying off precious booty and killing many of the monks.
Alcuin wrote a lament on the atrocity, and in his poem he sang of the fall and decline of so many great cities, Rome included. His words were almost prophetic.
Now the dear house of God where Peter's body lies, the Prince Apostle, men say is now laid waste by treacherous hands, her precious things their loot. And Rome, the crown and the flower, Rome that was golden, a heap of wild ruins now, thy glory down beaten with swords, a huddle of shabby roofs men see thee now, sullen, sunken, alone.
The Eternal City was only a shadow of its former self, despite the rich furnishings of the church over St. Peter's tomb.
This had now seen some 500 years of life. And in that time, the great church built by Constantine had been the recipient of the votive offerings of kings, popes, and emperors. By the middle of the 9th century, it could truly be considered the richest museum in Europe.
But in a short time, Rome was to be devastated once again. For one morning, in the August of the year 846, 70 Moorish ships crept stealthily up the Tiber.
There are no chronicles of the Saracen invasion of Rome, so it is not known whether they attempted to make an attack on the city itself. As the Aurelian walls were still in good condition for defence, it's thought that the Romans probably succeeded in keeping them out, and that the Turks made no attempt to scale the walls. Instead, they sacked Trastevere, which was undefended, and rifled the basilicas of St. Peter and St. Paul, both of which were outside the walls.
The Roman colony of Saxons, Lombards, Frisians, and Franks did their best to defend the Borgo area around the Vatican, but they were overcome by the superior forces of the enemy, and soon the sacred hill was abandoned to the mercy of the infidels.
The raiders carried off Constantine's golden cross, Pope Hadrian's chandelier, and the silver altar table which Charlemagne had presented to Pope Leo on the occasion of his coronation.
The silver-wrought work on the main door was wrenched off, and the gold on the floor of the confession.
The marauders stole the main altar and devastated the crypt, but the bronze sarcophagus of St. Peter was too heavy for them, and they had to be content with forcing the lock and scattering or destroying the contents.
But although the invaders carried off many precious spoils, they never discovered the tombs. For Pope Sergius II had known for months that they were coming, and had time to wall up the tombs and conceal perfectly the entrances to the vaults where they were situated.
6 months later, Sergius died and was succeeded by Leo IV, a pope who was to make his own particular mark on what we know now as Vatican City.
Rome was still in a state of shock, made worse by an earthquake and then by a fire which broke out in the Saxon quarter. The wooden roofs of the houses were soon a prey to the flames, and the Borgo was quickly reduced to ashes.
The legend runs that as the fire spread in the direction of St. Peter's, the Pope came out on his balcony, made the sign of the cross over the flames, which suddenly died down.
The Saxon area of the Borgo was not rebuilt until some years later, when King Ethelwulf of England came to Rome on pilgrimage, bringing with him his 7-year-old son Alfred. The English king and his son were given a great welcome by the Pope, and they in their turn brought a great chest full of gifts for St. Peter, including a crown of pure gold and a silver gilt candelabrum.
The English visitors must have listened to many a tale of that dramatic time from those Saxons who had fought the Saracens and seen the Borgo in flames. It's recorded that King Ethelwulf rebuilt and restored the Saxon quarter. He was the first Saxon king to grant tithes to the church, and he reaffirmed the hearth tax, formerly imposed on English homes for the upkeep of the colony. Peter's Pence, as it came to be known, continued to be paid until Henry VIII abolished it in 1534.
It was during the years of Reconstruction that the Saracens made their second attempt to attack Rome. This time, they approached from Sardinia, but the Christians were ready for them and attacked first. A violent storm then blew up, and the enemy, unused to sea battles, was overwhelmed.
The survivors were taken to Rome and, ironically, were put to work on the reconstruction of the city and the new Leonine fortifications around the Vatican Hill. This, Pope Leo IV's greatest work, was begun in 848 and completed in 852.
The whole of the Vatican territory, which was also known as the Portico of St. Peter's, was enclosed within the new walls. These began at Castel Sant'Angelo, stretched along and up the Vatican Hill, curved round behind St. Peter's and down in a straight line to the river.
Entry to the new city was through three gates, two of which were placed at the castle end of the wall. One was small, the other, larger, was the main entrance, and it was by this gate that emperors made their entrance to the Vatican. The third gate connected the new city with Trastevere and was called Posterula Saxonum because it stood in the Saxon quarter.
When the wall was completed in 852, it was given the name of Civitas Leonina, and a great ceremony took place to celebrate its completion. All the hierarchy, barefoot and with ashes on their heads, walked the length of the wall singing psalms. At the head of the procession walked the seven cardinal bishops who sprinkled the wall with holy water. At each of the gates, the procession halted, and the Pope prayed for a blessing on the new city.
We only belong to yesterday, and yet already we fill your kingdom, towns, castles, villages, societies, academies.
All the peoples we rule shall practice that religion which the divine Peter the Apostle transmitted to the Romans. We shall believe in the single deity of the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit under the concept of equal majesty and the Holy Trinity.
The empire of Charlemagne was no more. The dream had turned out to be a delusion. Europe was moving inevitably towards feudal anarchy. And as the first 1,000 years of Christianity came to an end, people wondered what the new millennium would bring.